Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. What if the secret to leadership, connection, and lasting influence wasn't in your words, but in your presence? Well, today's guest on Relationships Rule, Nina Perez, is a transformation coach, a TEDx speaker, and best-selling author who teaches high-achieving professionals how to embody confidence, not just perform it. With over 40 years of dance experience and 25 years of teaching, Nina blends movement, mindset, and practical connection skills to help people show up as their most magnetic selves. And in this episode, we're going to look at how embodied confidence changes how you lead, connect, and are remembered in business and in life. And by the way, welcome, Nina. And I was just looking at these numbers and like you still are only like a baby. So, I mean, 40 years of dance and 25 years of teaching. So a lot under your belt. And welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Yes, I am 45. So I started very young in my dance career and I started teaching in my 20s.
There you go.
How the numbers add up quickly.
They do, don't they? But you're a gem in everything that you do. And I'm honored to have you on the show. It's been a long time since we first met. And you are an example, actually, for me of connections, staying connected. I mean, we've gone in and out, we've woven in and out of each other's lives over the years, you know, messaging here and checking in there. But the most recent one, when you came to me for some LinkedIn training, we've had a lot of time lately together. So I love that.
Yeah.
And
I remember when I first met you.
Do you?
And then I do. I remember it was at a BNI.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of people. So you meet like 30, 40 people, but you send me a card. And, you know,
I did.
That was very memorable. I remember thinking, like, who does that anymore? Like, that's such a rare thing nowadays. And from that moment, I knew, like, okay, you're different. She's special. And she believes in the kind of values that I do, which is, you know, going a little bit extra above and beyond when you're connecting with someone, getting to know them, getting to know what's important, and then adding that personal touch, like a card or a voice message or anything that's just where you know people care, where you know that they did that extra little bit of, you know, personal touch always impresses me. And that's what I teach my clients, right? You want to do the little thing, like, you know how they say the last mile is never crowded or something like that.
Oh yeah. There's no, something on the last mile. But before you get into that, thank you. And I didn't pay Nina to say any of that. So just so you know, I wanted that on the record. That was very kind of you, but it's not busy on the last mile or something like that. It's not crowded.
It's not crowded.
So speaking of the last mile,
the extra mile is never crowded.
That's right. Something like that. Okay. So that's a good place to start, because my first question has to do with your journey and how you have stated that you're a recovering shy girl. And now, of course, you're a connection coach, and that's a pretty powerful jump. So what were the turning points for you?
Oh my gosh, I have so many stories. And today I was actually remembering a story because I was preparing for a post I was going to make around, and you'll see this in the future, around having lack of confidence when you're already achieving a lot of great things. Mm-hmm. So I work with a lot of clients that are amazing, and they're confident in certain areas, but when it comes to going to the next level, and you know, you're gonna go, instead of speaking to 100 people, now you wanna speak to 1,000 people, or you wanna pitch in a different arena, or you want to, you know, grow and scale your business, or whatever it is, the next level, we always get these ideas in our heads that maybe we're not ready, or we're not good enough, or imposter syndrome. And I was in the shower actually remembering a story of my dance days when I was was in Las Vegas for a World Salsa Championship, and I was actually watching it. I wasn't performing or competing this time. And I remember that I was in the crowd, in the dance community there. There was like a dance after the competition, and the world champion was there, and we locked eyes, and I smiled, and I walked up to him, and I had courage enough to say, like, can I have a dance with you? And he was like, yes, after this lady I'm dancing with, I can find you right after, and we'll dance. And I was like, great. And then I went and I hid in the bleachers. That's exactly what I did. And I watched him dance with that beautiful woman. And then I saw him looking around, and I knew he was looking for me. And I was kind of sitting up high. You couldn't really see me unless you looked up, and he wasn't. And so he looked around, and I saw him go back and forth, and I froze, and I stayed sitting in the bleachers watching, knowing that I let that opportunity go by. Knowing that I was like stuck because I was thinking, what if I mess up? You know, he's the world champion. What if, you know, he doesn't enjoy the dance, and what is he going to think of me? And this is when I was already a dance
accomplished sister. Dancer.
You know, I was already like a big deal in my city, you know, and so on. And it just made me think about this morning about how we sometimes stop ourselves, that voice in our heads stop us. Oh. And for me, it was that shy girl, that lack of confidence. And let me just, I'm going to share another story, because within the same year, I actually
reached LA. Stop for a second. Before you share that other story, I have to just step in, because if he had said yes immediately and you danced right then, because he wasn't committed to the other person, none of that would have happened.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you think it would have? No.
You're right. I think I would have danced if he had said yes right there.
Yeah.
I would have probably been shaking in my boots the whole time.
But you didn't have time to second guess yourself. Right. So I think that's a huge piece there. And you sabotaged yourself for sure. So now I want to hear
100%. I lost that opportunity because of shyness, lack of confidence. But I want to share, I was in LA, like not months later, and I went salsa dancing, and this gentleman asked me to dance. And, you know, everybody seems good in LA. I have no idea who's who. But at the end of the dance, and we had an amazing dance, he did things that I was like, thank God I can relax and surrender to following, and we're able to do complicated moves that I've never done before.
Because he was a good lead.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
And at the end, he goes to me, if you're ever, where are you from? I'm like, Vancouver, because he knew you're not from Vancouver. He goes, if you ever move to LA, I want you to call me. I want to dance with you. And he gave me his card, and he was a world champion from the Vegas competitions that I went. And it's so funny. So I didn't know who he was, and I danced with him, no problem. And I think back to where I hid back with the other world champion, and it was my head, it was my inner thoughts that stopped me. The truth was, I was good enough to dance with all of them, right? I mean, I got the proof when I danced with the other gentleman, but because I didn't know who he was, I was, you know, no problem.
Right.
But it's us who kind of believe our own lies.
Yes. And oh yeah, for sure.
Amazing. I always think about the opportunity that could have happened. You know, at the worst, we would have had a dance. I would have maybe screwed up a little bit or not. We would have been friends. But at the worst, we could have had a great dance and a great memory.
Yeah.
But at the best, it could have been something for my career. It could have been who knows what the possible.
Right. But it wasn't your time then. It wasn't.
Who knows, right?
Yeah. It was meant to teach you that for the next time, obviously. I mean.
Well, those are the stories that help me now in my career, because now I know if I was my confident self talking to my younger self, I would have said, go for it. You know,
don't worry,
do it messy, and go have that memory, go have that experience. Mm-hmm. And all those stories, and I have many that have taught me how important it is to nurture your confidence, embody your confidence, build it day to day, so that when the opportunity comes, you don't let it slip away, you know?
So how do you teach people to embody their confidence?
Oh, I love this question. So we hear a lot in the world about self-care and you need to nurture and your self-love and confidence and your confidence. And what I feel like it leads people to do is to try to carve out some time and do self-care. Maybe you want to meditate. Maybe you want to spend some time journaling and so on. And that is very important. I'm not knocking that. Mm-hmm. However, I feel like embodiment is when you take that big practice that maybe you spend 20 minutes a day or an hour a day meditating or whatever it is that helps you feel full and mm-hmm. it helps you feel confident in yourself. But you need to divide it into micro habits during the day where it reminds you about that self-care moment, or it helps you in a micro way bring that into your moment to moment in everyday life. And that's where I find people don't have enough training or skills, or they're not right. designing their lives around it. And so they just do the self-care like in the morning, but
it's segregated. It's off by itself. Okay.
And they slip back into their old ways, or they forget, or like by the end of the day, you lose the willpower of the thing you said. And,
yeah.
and so it's not within your life. It's not peppered into your movements moment to moment. And so then people are not embodying the things that they would like to feel all the time. They're just feeling it at a prescribed time. And so I teach clients how to make that habit of, yes, you need to have a moment where you practice this, maybe gratitude journal or whatever it is going to help you feel confident yep. and full. But then how do you bring that in the 24 hours after, yeah. like throughout your whole day in micro ways so that it can keep nurturing, keep filling your cup, and you are feeling amazing throughout the day, or even when you're having a challenge, or even when you're like feeling lower or something and you're like, okay, this is what I need to do. I need to do an embodiment practice right now. It has to take less than a minute and get you into that reminder of who you really are and your practices.
So that's really big. That's a really big point. Yeah, that's a really big point. And it made me think of something, and I don't know if it's connected or not, but it's, I guess I was in a personal development kind of course somewhere downtown one day, many, many, many years ago. And one of the exercises that we had to do was not in the day, but go home and do this, like, and come back to the next class kind of thing, was to go into a department store or a big store and have like two different shoes on or something. And like, you know, because, you know, you're all about image and all about looks, and you go outside and you're wearing either a slipper and a boot or whatever. And I did it.
Oh,
and of course, nobody cares. Nobody paid attention. Nobody even knew. So what? Right. But we get so it was a person. I think it was like a image consulting kind of thing that I went to.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so nobody even paid attention. That was a huge piece for me.
Yeah. In it,
you know, to say, you know, I mean, I'm a detail oriented person. I notice those things.
I would have noticed, but yeah, not but not like majorities noticing.
People aren't looking so down at your feet either. You know, exactly. They're in their phone. Nowadays, they're just looking at their phones, but this was way back a long time ago. But anyway, so how would you give me an example of someone you're coaching and they're not confident yet, and you're talking about this and you're saying like, this is the type of micro lesson I want you to practice. All this week.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I have one client. She was She was transitioning careers. She wanted mm-hmm. to get out of the industry she was in, and she wanted to try something completely different. And so we started working on first getting clear, like, what is that new mm-hmm. career that you want? And at the time, because she didn't know, she felt really indecisive. And so then that totally affected her confidence in choosing what she wanted, but also yeah. in deciding which path to go. And, you know, it was a very tough moment for her. We finally went through creating a vision. What do you want? What would be the ideal? But then one of the things that came up during our sessions was that she really wanted to feel like, I need to find my purpose, she would say, right? And I gave her this idea that, yes, you can have a purpose, but then you can live on purpose. You can throughout the day have multiple purposes. You know, sometimes it might be for you to be a present mother, or it might be, or a grandmother, right? Or it might be that you want to be really a healthy cook for yourself during the day. And then, you know, you go and you're a business person, you're a speaker, maybe that you want to have amazing presence when you're speaking, connecting to the audience, whatever it is. There's more than one purpose. It might be all under connection, for example, that's my mission. But right. there's different parts of the day where I'm following different purposes. Mm-hmm. And I like to think of that I am living on purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I gave her those ideas and she thought about them a lot. And so one of the habits, the bigger habits, was for her to envision what she wanted and to think about all the areas of her life. So we do that. This is very well known, you know, in our world of coaching. Yeah. You need to have a vision. People carve it out. What I find that is one of the mistakes people make is that they do that once a year, right? Or like only New Year's resolutions, right? They're not doing it at best, maybe once a quarter, but nobody looks at that, you know, after they've done it. This is what I noticed, that people don't make it like a living document. Anyway, so we did that, the visioning, and I had her also think about how can she live, like look at the purpose that she has, the vision, how can she live it in micro ways during the different segments of her day? So she's working at her job, then she has a partner in life, then she has a dog, then she has a community, family, friendships. And we looked at a micro habit. So for her, she was like, I want to embody this type of energy when I'm with my partner. And so she wrote it down. And then she was like, I want to embody this other type of energy when I'm with my coworkers. I want to really be a good listener. Okay, great. With her partner, she wanted to be present. Okay, with her dog, she wanted to really enjoy her time outdoors and so on. So the micro habit was for her to remember to do that, to tune into the different feelings, but she used a doorway. So anytime she would walk through the doorway of whatever direction she was going into her house, she would remember, oh, I want to embody being a present partner. And so she would walk home, walk into the doorway through the home, and she would embody that vision of hers, which was the big vision, but in a micro way. When she would get in the car, that was another doorway that she would get into, and she would get herself ready for work. When she would get out the door to walk the dog, again, the doorway was the trigger.
That's good.
And it was so good. You know, she changed completely. We had 6 months working together, but it was a whole different person because she was enlivened by living on purpose, you know, in her everyday moment to moment. And it's so inspiring. You can even see, like, I have her on Zoom, her first session to her last session, her skin is even different. Like, she just looks like she's glowing because she's so happy living on purpose. And, you know, life is not perfect. Her life, she hadn't figured out the career yet and all that stuff, but she was living in this place of feeling empowered and confident. So that's what I love to do.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. So we have to talk though about how dance comes into this, because that's been your life for many, many years, 40 years, you said, of dance. And so how does movement like dance help unlock that confidence and presence when you're in a professional career, let's say, in a professional space? I mean, I know for me, I love dancing, and I haven't been able to dance for a long time because my knees are bad. I'm getting old, but it breaks my heart. So now I just love watching dancing. So, but for many years, dancing was big for me, not professional dancing, just casual, you know, for personal
fun dancing.
Fun dancing. But for you, it's been a big part of your life and your career. So how do you work that in, or do you, with your...
100%. Well, communication, as we know, is 7% verbal and 93% nonverbal.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
true.
We're talking, there's a lot of body language here. And when I used to teach dance, I used to say, if you can walk, you can dance. But really when I'm teaching out of dance, I say, like, walking is like dancing. It's a movement through the world. And so how you move through the world matters, and people will make conclusions about you. They will think things about you and even add things that you may have nothing to do with you because of how you walk and how you express, how you're using your body language. And so I don't teach people how to dance all the time, but a lot of my practices are about getting into your body and actually understanding your body. How are you currently moving? What are you doing right now that may be sending signals that are repelling people or attracting people? So kind of getting to know your body, getting into the body. And also the thing that I use my dance background in helping people is understanding that you cannot force the body so far out of the comfort zone And that will not benefit you. What's going to happen is people will come back, they'll slingshot back. And so let's say you push yourself to go out and network every day for a month, or every, you know, you push yourself out of your comfort zone so much, your body actually is getting a little bit traumatized every time, because you may not want to do that. And so you're forcing yourself. And so you're telling your brain, I don't like this, but I'm doing this. And your brain is recording this resistance. And then next time it's increasing it. And next time it's increasing it. So I help people get their bodies feeling safe, feeling and working with their bodies as they're going out to connect with the world. Like, you need to go and connect, but you don't want to do it in a way that it's so uncomfortable, so far out of your comfort zone, that your body's like, let's record this one as a negative experience, you know? Yeah. And so how do you use that to your advantage? How to help your brain and your body work with you? And so my dance background has taught me a lot of getting into the body, how to calm when you're nervous, right? How to calm your nervous system down, but also like how to tap into the energies that you do want to exude. When I was in dance, I could be sometimes very playful, or I could be passionate, or I could be demure, or I could be melancholic when I would dance tango. Like, I could tune into different energies, different identities, different ideas. And
well, did you think of that as acting, or is it different?
I actually thought of that as feeling different parts of myself.
Okay.
You know, because actually, if you look at good acting, you don't think they're acting, you know, that they're tapping into some deep sorrow.
That's true.
And using it, or else it would look fake. Right. And so I always say, don't fake it till you make it. You want to feel it till you become it. So that's where my dance background helps me so much. I teach people how to feel these things really naturally in your body, and then use that to move through your world in this different feeling.
Okay.
And people notice.
Well, of course they do. Of course they do. I'm thinking about like a new partnership, dance partnership, business partnership, doesn't really matter, except that I know you notice it very overtly when it's I'm thinking of Dancing with the Stars right now. So when they first start their connection with each other, they have to learn to get that chemistry, and some of them have it and some of them don't with their partner, right? Yeah. And so that's why I say sometimes like the actors or the professional people who are used to being in public, whether they're dancers or something else, but they're used to dealing with the public, they seem to have that such much more at ease than those who don't. And yet, if you were like to get that chemistry, it's not acting, right? It's like you said, it's more, it has to come from within. But is it, I don't know, like I'm like, oh, you know, is this real? You know?
I think we always feel a certain vibe, even if we can't name it. And so part of my work, a lot of people, you know, they confuse this whole idea of fake it till you make it and so on.
Yeah,
and
I don't agree with that either.
Feel it till you become it. But part of my work, I notice with my clients that when they learn how to feel safe and relax, they bring out who they naturally are.
That's
and so
true.
You are charismatic at home with your friends, or like with the people that you feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And so my job is to help you do that with strangers too, when you're networking or when you're out, and really be able to learn how to share yourself so that others can feel your heart and connect with you in that way. When you feel somebody's heart, somebody's you know, values, you can't help but connect if you share those values.
Right. I love that.
If you
love
share
that.
Those values, you can.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, so what you're doing really is very rewarding when it works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And when it doesn't work, it's data. It's data, and you need a tool. You need to learn a skill. You need to figure it out. And it's all very figure outable. As Marie Forleo says,
yeah,
totally figure it out. And because we are very, humans are, we're all pretty much the same. A lot of time is blocks around limiting beliefs or not knowing how to practice in a way that makes you feel comfortable. I find that a lot is that. A lot of people understand that they need to go and ask somebody a better question or start a conversation, but they're not there yet. It's too out of their comfort zone to do that. And so how do you practice from not being able to being able to? You have to break it down into more baby steps Sometimes I say to my clients, don't talk to the people that you want to talk to, but you can't. Just go and smile, or just go for a walk and make eye contact. And you bring it down a bit in a way that you're telling your body, it's all good. I was able to do this little extra thing and it went well. And now your body is like, okay, I'm getting comfortable with this. Let's do the next one, right? But if you're like pushing yourself so far out, then your body's like, I don't ever want to do that again.
That's really good, because it makes me think that for so many people, a lot of it stems from their childhood. I mean, a lot of it stems back to their childhood, whether it was really religious and they weren't allowed to do certain things, and now they're, you know, becoming themselves and fighting, you know, what they've chosen to believe in or whatever. But it may also be not necessarily religious, just a strict upbringing or a not so strict upbringing or whatever it was, that it all comes out when they're in situations that could be uncomfortable and are uncomfortable. Yeah. Because they've never experienced them. So what would you say the biggest conception people have is the biggest misconception people have about charisma or about just showing up?
Oh, I love this question. The biggest misconception is that some people have it and some people don't. Right? Oh, you're charismatic. Great. I'm not charismatic. Mm. And I believe that's a lie. I believe everybody is charismatic. There's just different flavors of charisma. And you just, what is charisma? Charisma is others perceiving you as highly warm and highly competent. So if others see you that way, you will be labeled as charismatic. Now, there are so many different flavors. You know, Oprah is highly charismatic. She's highly warm and competent. But also, I look at like somebody who's more shy, like Margaret Thatcher or like Simon Sinek, right? He's a thoughtful leader, but he's not going to be like making jokes like Trevor Noah, who's also charismatic. Right. All these people are charismatic in a different way.
In their own way.
But they do have... You feel their warmth, you know that they care about you, and they also, you feel their competence. You know they're capable, you know that you can trust and rely on what they're saying. They have authority, credibility, but it's not always the social butterfly. So sometimes people equate charisma with social butterfly, and it doesn't have to be that way. You just need to bring out your flavor of warmth and your flavor of competence, what you know how to do it, like what you're capable of, your abilities and so on. And so if you know how to do that while you are having conversations and sharing how you care and then what you know, then people will perceive you as that. And everybody wants to hang out with people who are charismatic because you like them and you trust them and so on. So that's the biggest myth. I don't have it. It's not me. Or the other thing, once people believe that they are somewhat charismatic, the second misconception or the second thing I run into is I can only do it for some time. So it's like, I turn it on, I turn it off. I have to be on and then I have to go off. So they toggle between being
charismatic. Because it's exhausting.
Because it's exhausting. Yes. And that's because they do not have rituals of radiance, I call them. They don't have a way to nurture their confidence daily. Like I said earlier,
yes,
dedicated time, but your micro moments. And so, of course, you're going to drain your energy if you do not have a way to sustain it throughout your 24 hours.
That's a very good point I hadn't thought of, because it's true. People say then, oh, well, I'm an introvert or I'm an extrovert. And that's where that isn't necessarily the same thing at all.
But, I'm an introvert, and I have to say a lot of people in the limelight are introverts.
I know.
They know how to bring out what's important, right? They know how to share themselves.
Yeah. It's just that, but a lot of performers, particularly actors, they're more shy than not necessarily introverts, because introverts don't get their energy from a lot of an audience or a lot of people, whereas extroverts do. So I think there's, again, it's just terminology and so forth as well. Okay, so you've answered some of my questions already, but let's talk about leadership. Do you come across some of your clients are trying to level up, you'd mentioned earlier.
Oh, yes.
And what do you see as one of the biggest things that you have to work with them on? Is it because you mentioned about speaking to bigger crowds, but it's not just that. For leadership is many different things. So what comes to mind for you?
Well, so I'll answer this in two ways. Two things come to mind. First of this when we're talking about leadership and sharing yourself to the world, is that their opinions matter, that they're relevant, that they have enough to share. A lot of people are worried of stating their stories or sharing or even sharing stories. Like, I don't want to monopolize the conversation, or I don't want to be, and usually you won't. If you have that thought, you will ask questions too, but you do want to share a little bit more detail about you than just, facts, right? You want to share more stories than, and also you want to share your opinions. So that's one part that I'm noticing with all the people that I work with, and wherever they are. I work with solopreneurs and entrepreneurs and CEOs. It doesn't matter. It's still going to be different arenas, but it's still the same issue of like, not being sure if what they have to say is important, relevant enough, And the second part is doing that on social media. So now when you have the audience that you don't see, right? The non-audience, right? It's there, but you can't interact. You cannot see the reactions of people. You don't know how it's landing. What are they thinking, saying on the other side of that green dot or the red dot? Then there's a different level of anxiety, and also because it's going to stay forever, right? Like, it's going to be out there, it's on video, or it's going to be promoted or whatever. So it's another level where I find people are hiding, or they're just worried, or they just cannot get the courage to put themselves out there again. And I battle with this all the time too. So it's as you're leveling up, there is going to be an edge that you're going to come up against. And you need to really lean into your confidence, who you are, your past, harvest your past, and also know that you are going to help someone. Your story will be somebody else's, survival manual is what Brené Brown says. So share your story.
Well, okay. So the first example that you gave, which now I've just forgotten, about more in person, about telling stories versus not telling stories. I think I, for example, I'm thinking about, stories sell, facts tell. Or something like that. That's how it goes, right? Facts tell, stories sell. And so it's important to learn how to tell a story so that it does so many things. If you're telling a story, like for me, when I talk, somebody said this to me once on a podcast, when you talk about your granddaughter, you light up like you would not believe. And it's true, right? So when I tell a story about my granddaughter, I'm really authentically me because I just love her so much and I love everything about being a grandma. I'm going to start crying. That being said, if I'm nervous or if I don't think it's appropriate, I might just, rattle on facts, right? And that's not going to be as effective in a conversation, right? Mind you, I tend to deflect as well, and I will ask questions and get the other person talking. And I find that to be very helpful for me when I'm, trying to get to know people or, whatever. But yet if I'm doing a presentation, that's the hardest thing for me to do is to tell stories. And I remember someone saying to me, pick someone in the first row and just speak to them. Right? So it's little things like that. But it just made me think of those things I wanted to share. And then the second part of what you were talking about social media, I think there's like, well, I at first I thought there was like a dividing line between generations, that it was easier for the younger generations to talk about themselves than the older generations. But then I see someone like the Golden Bachelorette who's put her whole life out there and is now making money from it apart from her being on The Bachelorette. So, and she's, almost 70 if she's not 70. But yeah, it's just interesting. It's what is your comfort zone on things like that? So I guess, like you said, baby steps, baby
Baby
steps.
steps. Yeah. So with my clients, I'll say, if somebody asks you what you're interested or what's your passion project and you're, or what's your hobbies? And you're like, I like to do yoga 3 times a week. great. That's a little story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a little fact. It's a fact, right?
Yeah.
But if you share more, like I like to do yoga 3 times a week because I find that it enlivens my energy, or because I love the music that they use and it just makes me think about peace all the time, and whatever it is, you just add because. And you just add one more layer to your little story.
Okay. Yes.
That's the baby step. You know, eventually you'll be able to tell stories that grip somebody's heart and makes them be like, what's the next thing, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the beginning, you just start with a little, one more layer, right? And then sometimes you may share like a moment in time in the past, and then you describe it a little bit, like who was there? Was it in the kitchen? What were you talking about? Like what happened? You know, I just wrote a chapter for a book called Pain to Power. And I describe a moment where I slammed the door in the car, and I felt that slamming the door was like some hypnotist waking me up, you know, and I remember that moment. It changed my life, that moment, but it was the slam of the door. And I describe that in the chapter, and so you get better at having others see you in the moment, slamming the car door. Now that's a better story, right? They can put themselves, and as you share your story, they're gonna relate to parts of what you say, and they're gonna think, am I like that? Or, you know, and that's when you start connecting at a deeper level.
Right.
Because if you can find common ground, like, oh, I've thought about that too, or I have a moment like that too, or what you said, I know what that feels like. Now you're creating that chemistry you were talking about earlier, because we're connecting heart to heart, energy to energy, common ground to common ground, right?
Right, right. That's beautiful. I was just thinking, and this isn't on my question list, but I know you have a son, right?
Yes.
Or two. You have one son, right?
I have a son that I birthed, and then I have a bonus daughter.
Right. Okay.
My partner's daughter.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I wanted to, how long have you been?
7 years.
With your partner. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but with your son, I wanted to say, have you seen, or when he was younger, when he was the only child, now he's got an older sibling, right?
They're the same age, actually.
That's right. They are. So do you see any areas where you've taught him those things along the way?
Oh,
do you know what I'm trying to say?
You know, because kids, they don't listen to you, but they watch you.
Yeah.
You know, and they it's like they observe, and they're like little sponges. So I have a beautiful story. It was 5 a.m. and Gavin, I'm up early every morning, and I hear him like rustling around. I'm like, what's going on? And he's making this card, and it's the last day of elementary school. And he's like, you know, ruffling through his thick crafts in his bedroom and making a card for a friend. And he was so like, I really want to make sure they know how I care about them. And I want to continue the friendship, even though we're going to different schools and so on. And so he thought it was important enough to wake up like hours before he normally wakes up to make this card for his friend, and to give it on the last day of school. That is from him observing that I always say, like, you want to make cards. Like, he sees me writing letters and cards to people and sending things. But I always say to him, it's so important to tell people what you love about them, what you admire about them, and so on. And so I was so proud, you know, I felt so wonderful to observe him, that it was important to him to wake up early. And you know how kids are with sleep, right? They don't want to wake up, right? And they don't want to go to sleep. They want to stay up late and so on.
Right.
But he woke up and made it a priority for him to do this before breakfast. And it was beautiful. And he read me the note, and I was like so touched. It was a beautiful letter to his friend, to keep the friendship going. And of course, I made a post about that because I was so like,
proud
about how, when you care, people, you do things, you do the extra thing. So are you showing people that you care, you know, when you're even building new relationships? Are you asking questions? Are you finding out? Are you showing up for your new friends to their master classes, to the thing? Are you doing the things that are going to help that relationship grow?
It's funny. I have a cute little story about Amara, my granddaughter. They live in an apartment complex. It's a fairly big one, and it's new, and there's lots of people around, and there's dogs allowed. And my other daughter, not the mother of Amara, but my other daughter has a dog, and they actually live together, all of them. And Amara and I were going down the elevator one day, and this guy came in the elevator with his one of his two dogs. And she looked, and she's six, and she looked at the guy and she said, "Hi, how's," and she patted the dog, and the dog's name was Carol, which is quite funny in itself. Yes. But she said, and I forget the other dog's name, but she asked this guy, she said, "Hi," she said, "how's Joan," you know, the other dog, whatever the yeah. dog's name was, "how's Joan doing?" Like, she wasn't afraid to ask. She knew this dog more than she knew the person. She was very, it was so cute. But, you know, we have this thing about, you know, don't talk to strangers. And yet there's something, you know, it shuts kids down too much sometimes. We have to know and be, but we have to understand the difference too. And that's sometimes difficult when you're six.
Yeah.
But anyway,
but sometimes adults carry that. Like, now you're 30, 40, and you yeah. still have that in the back of your mind. Don't talk to strangers running. Exactly. The fact that yeah. you're like not being friendly in the world, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy, right? All right. Last question about your work, because I can see in just the conversation we've had, people will see or will listen, will hear, our listeners will actually hear the passion that you have for your work. I know it because it comes through so clearly. So what would you say to someone who thinks that they're just not that confident that, you know, knowing that this can be learned?
Yeah. So all of us started with not being confident. And even if you have achievements, you still may have an area where you're like, I know I'm hiding. I know I'm yeah. not gonna go for it. I know I'm like waiting for something to happen. We all have that in every moment. And the thing is, it is something that you can nurture. It is something that can grow just like a flower, right? We know it takes time. We know it takes some daily practice, but it can be really fun. Like, I give my clients home fun. I don't call it homework. I'm like, this is your home fun that you're going to yeah. do. And it's little experiments. And there's no like right or wrong way. It's not one size fits all. You know, some of my tools, I call them self-connection tools. You might not love one or the other, but you want to try them and see how it feels. If your nervous system is like, "I loved that," great. Right. You know, if your nervous system's like, "That was really hard." Like, one of the things I sometimes ask clients to do is just really simply, you know, look in the mirror and tell themselves something great about themselves. A lot of my clients cannot do that, let alone if I say "I love you" to yourself in the mirror, that is very hard to do. And so we tone it back to, well, look in the mirror and tell yourself what you did today. I went yeah. to the doctor and I went to the yeah. groceries and just start. And that is the baby step needed to start becoming like able to relate to yourself in a different way while you're looking at yourself in the mirror. So everybody starts somewhere, and it can definitely be learned, and it's a skill, and you just have to do some home fun around it.
Okay. Yep.
And go from A to B. And most of the time, the change is much more rapid than we think. You know, I just did a 3-day live workshop, and after the 3 days, a lot of people are like, "I can see how if I did this every day, I can see how it can be possible that my energy will stay up, that I can have, you know, I'm capable and resourceful. I can do all these things." You know, when you can see the path, it's much easier for you to go.
Sure. And it's also lovely that you have someone in your corner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? So I see that would be really helpful as well.
And a community, because I also have communities that you can be a part of. So you don't only learn from me, but you can also see what the other clients are doing. I love group programs because that's, it, you know, even in corporations, we have a board of directors. It's not just a lone person.
They can feed off each other, right? Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I wasn't going to ask this, but I am going to, because I think it's an important piece that I ask some of my guests. I haven't been asking it lately, but I think this is a perfect time to ask it. And this is my curiosity question.
Okay.
It's because I think that we both know the power of curiosity, and it's my favorite word. And I want to know from you two things. One, do you think that it's innate or learned? And secondly, what are you most curious about these days?
What great questions. I think we start off as innate. Like babies are curious. They want to eat everything. They want to touch everything. They want to explore everything. I think over time, we lose that curiosity and we need to relearn it. And so I do so much work on teaching people how to look at people in a curious way, like how to look at the world in a curious way. Go for a walk and find 10 things that you're like, this is amazing. This is beautiful. This is awe-inspiring. So that's nurturing your curiosity. That's developing that skill of curiosity. Mm-hmm. So as a baby, we have it. Some way as we're growing up, we kind of lose the innateness of it and then we have to relearn it. Okay. And what I'm curious about, so many things. I mean, I'm reading 4 books at the same time.
I was just going to ask you what you're reading. So that's a lot.
Well, I can tell you, I'm curious right now about listening, you know, the opposite of what we're doing.
Do you know what the anagram of listen is?
No, I don't.
Silent.
Ah,
isn't that interesting?
That is so cool. Listen.
I know. Mm-hmm. Silent. How can you listen if you're too busy talking?
Exactly. So that's one of the books I'm reading.
It's okay. Called,
Listening, the Forgotten Skill.
Oh, I have that book. It's been around for a while, right?
A long time. Yeah.
That's where I got it from, I'm sure, from that book. Because I used to teach listening as part of one of the courses, soft skills I used to teach. And that's, I'm sure it's in my library over here. Yeah. Anyway. Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm really curious about what would be the possibility if I keep improving my listening skills, what is going to come out of that? Like, and you know, in the world we hear a lot, people want to be seen, heard and loved and so on. And I feel like, you know, there's not enough attention on listening really from the heart. So that's what I'm curious. I mean, I'm curious about a lot of things. Do you want to know more?
No, I was trying to just take that in because I think the more we listen carefully and fully, the more curious we become, the more we can build rapport with people. I think it goes around and around, but you have to be curious enough to do it in the first place. And, you know, like I do it with LinkedIn training. I'm like, look at this person's profile and see what in there do you see that you're curious about? Is there anything there that you're curious about? And it could be the one little word that they have in their specialties section that says, two words that says, you know, like dance junkie or something like that, you know, something that would connect that person with you and so on. So yeah, I think it's just the start of everything for me is curiosity. So thank you for sharing with that. And this has been amazing.
Yeah, I loved it. What a great conversation.
Oh, thank you. So for my listeners, I think you would agree that confidence isn't just a skill. It's something you carry, you communicate, and you embody. And as Nina has shared today, when you stop trying to prove yourself and start showing up fully, everything changes. Your leadership, your conversations, your relationships. Whether you're building a business or leading a team, the way you feel in your body shapes the way others experience you. So the next time you walk into a room, ask yourself not what should I say, but how do I want to be remembered? And thanks for joining us today on Relationships Rule. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thank you, Nina.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Janice.
Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.